Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host, and I always love to give gratitude over to Don Newsome and Seth at BBS Radio for creating this wonderful platform to raise consciousness. Spiritual Hollywood is a show that is using positive media to make a difference. I have as my guest tonight Vanda Mikulowski, and she is a spiritually incorrect comic. I will read to you a little bit from her bio. You will enjoy her a lot. Her website is www.vanda, V-A, that's V as in Victor, A-N-D-A dot U-S. That's www.vanda.us. And without a moment longer, I'll let you know that she started, Vanda actually started her comedy career, back in 1982 at Catch a Rising Star in New York City. She has quite an illustrious background here. It's where she was a late-night MC, and she toured nightclubs and colleges in the U.S. and Canada for 15 years. You couldn't tell by looking. She must have started when she was five. Her television appearances include Showtime's Comedy Club Network, Comic Strip Live, and Lifetime Network's Girls' Night Out. And Vanda was voted the funniest person in Washington in Showtime's Funniest Person in America contest in 1987. As a yoga and meditation teacher, she toured with award-winning country pop artist, the Dixie Chicks, and that was in their 2000 Fly Tour for 6.5 months, as well as rock sensation Patty Griffin. And she makes her home in Venice, California, nurturing her third career as a spiritual quantum comic. I've seen Vanda's show. You don't want to miss it. And she has on her website at www.vanda.us her upcoming gigs. And she's using all of the knowledge, wisdom, and nonsense that she's acquired from influences such as the movies, What the Bleep Do We Know, and The Secret, Eckhart Tolle, Landmark Education, A Course in Miracles, Byron Katie, Ram Dass, and various channeled entities to inspire people through laughter. And Vanda says, standing on those shoulders, I intend to expand consciousness by stirring up and promoting irreverent reverence and to uplift, heal, and connect people through laughter. I would like to help people grow limbs back and such. So without further ado, what a statement to make. I'd like to introduce you to Vanda Mikulowski. Hello, Vanda.
Hi, thank you so much, Katie.
I know it was a last-minute thing that we booked you on the show tonight, and I figured you would just be ready to go because that seems to be your spirit.
Yes. Good, yeah. Good. Spontaneous is good.
Yes, good. So thank you for being here, by the way, and making time for this. And I'm very interested in the spiritually incorrect comedy, the movie that you are. Did you complete filming of it, or are you still in the process of filming it?
Well, we don't know. We have 49 hours of some gorgeous footage, and you know, it's someone told me recently about all of the possible infinite movies that could come out of that amount of footage, you know, and so I'm just realizing what an editor does. And we have some interviews with some luminaries, and we may get more of those, but the movie is shot, the concert film part of it,
mm-hmm.
and all the Sedona part of it, that's done.
Right.
And the tour bus, so all of that stuff is done. We might squeeze in a few more interviews. We're looking to get the Dalai Lama in it.
Yeah, he'll be absolutely in Los Angeles in April. Did you know that?
Yeah, I heard that a friend of a friend knows someone, and he'd be in a movie that was about laughter. That would be something that would be right up his alley.
Yeah, I think so. He probably would. I know they write me back every time I write to them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, good.
It is very good, and he's a very personable person. And one thing that he said on one of his YouTube videos that I always remember is, you know how everybody fights over which spirituality is the best one, which religion is the best one, which one's the right one. He,
mm-hmm.
he said religions are like a restaurant. If you go to the same restaurant every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you're served the same thing every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you're not want to go to that restaurant anymore. So what he suggests is if you sample every mode of spirituality and every religion and just keep sampling because it's all about God anyway.
Yes, that's an open-minded guy, you know. That's an open-minded guy who can say that. You know, didn't someone ask him, what would you do if we proved all of your Buddhist beliefs wrong? He said, I'd change them.
I didn't hear that one. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So yeah. When you were in Sedona, you actually interviewed Hale Dwoskin for the film?
Yeah. And the mayor of Sedona and this woman, Peggy Phoenix Dubrow, who does the energy work all over. And then a whole bunch of kind of just Sedona, I want to say the Angel and Dolphin woo-woo crowd without sounding too disrespectful, but we wanted to give that real flavor of Sedona because over there, have you been there, Kate?
Oh, yeah. I went to Hale Dwoskin's seminars over there.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So, but you know, the flavor of the town, it's just like if you have something wrong with you, God bless you, you're in the right place because there's thousands of modalities, you know.
Yeah.
You can go down the street and try everything, you know, and,
yeah.
And you get the sense that some people are like, I met an older guy who had worked with Einstein before, that these real scientists, you know, inquisitive, great minds, and then there are some like, you know, kind of deluded, wacky people, woo-woo.
Yeah.
You know, no, sometimes woo-woo is true, we know that,
mm-hmm.
but I poo-poo woo-woo sometimes, because,
yes.
You know, it's not always true. So,
right.
Yeah, so Sedona is such a cool mix of everything, just the spectrum of everyone, you know. And
seems like it's a rodeo drive of healing modalities.
Yeah, and it gets to me a little bit sometimes, like a conscious life expo or something like that, where it's just like a little bit barking at you, like, oh, there's too much stuff to try, you know, and
right.
And then I have, you know, I subscribe to a notion that nothing works.
Mm.
That, I mean, anything could work, or, you know, cleaning your kitchen could be a spiritual discipline, but nothing really works. You work, or intention works, you know.
Right.
So,
right. Come from you.
So, yeah, so that's what I you don't say that to everybody because they'll get mad, but.
Right, and it's, you know, some people aren't ready for that kind of truth, and it is the truth because we heal ourselves, and there are facilitators that assist us in remembering that we can do that, and that's what many of the people in Sedona are capable of doing, and many people everywhere are capable of doing. You know,
yeah,
you heal people with your comedy.
I heard someone say something about healing the other day. It's not really healing. It's really just... It's just the stopping of generating a lack of wellness. Or that's not elegant the way I said it, but there's not really healing. There's stopping the generation of lack of wellness.
Right.
I love that. That's similar to what you were just saying.
Yeah. So rather than believing in healing, it would be better to focus on just stopping the block in your abundance.
Yeah, it puts you at the source of your health rather than that person who has the power out there. People give their power away to me as a yoga teacher all the time. It's like, stop it!
Right.
You know?
Right. It's like, what do I do with this stuff? You know, this is yours. Take it back. And when you give your power away, you're not using it for yourself. So, it's good that you tell them that take it back.
Yeah, I love it. And I work with some older folks now and they go, well, the doctor said, and I go, I mean, with no disrespect, are you believing them? What do you mean, am I believing them? It's a doctor. That's a good question. Do you believe what that guy in the white coat said?
Right.
It's because he studied some stuff that was basically, I don't want to diss medical training, but
mm-hmm.
you know, it's basically everything that we know now we're going to laugh so hard at in 100 years, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I believe that that Western medicine is now starting to accept and embrace a bit more of the Eastern philosophy.
Yeah.
Which is good to see. Because
people have been pioneering that for so long till it's at that point. You know, like Deepak Chopra and Jon Kabat-Zinn and those guys are just like, they've been hammering for it for the longest time. And, you know, I think you're right. It's starting to get out there because it works. Because things work, you know. I mean, people get they get their acupuncture, and they're like, "This, I like this. I like this better than drugs." You know.
Yeah, it does. It does work better. Any kind of body work that you do really does help a lot. And it's when you just take the pharmaceuticals that you sort of lose yourself and you get out of touch with your own spiritual nature, And really, to be connected to source is what's going to bring you everything. It's going to help you attract your intentions that you set. And when you're out of sync with yourself, you can't really do that very well. And when you're anxious, you cannot be creative. It's not possible.
Yeah.
And drugs tend to do that. So let me give your website one more time. It's www.vanda.us. That's VANDA.US. And, Vanda, I'm going to draw from my memory of the show that I saw you do. I believe it was out in Westlake Village about a year ago, and you were at a Unity Church. And during your performance, you were saying how Eckhart Tolle and Deepak Chopra are your boyfriends?
Oh, yeah.
Want to elaborate on that?
Well, I don't want to upset anybody, but, yeah, they're... When I'm not with Wayne Dyer, I'm with those guys, and we're very open. You know, it's not, we're not clingy or needy or, you know, attached in any way. We just, you know, we allow, and all those guys, I go with them. I have a renewed interest in Ram Dass, but I don't think that he
is interested
in me.
Yeah. right. I think that. Just the way that you use that in your performance, really, I mean, for anyone who studies Eckhart Tolle or Wayne Dyer or Ram Dass or any of the people that are spiritual movers and shakers, living luminaries, visionaries, what you bring to your performance is just so funny. It is off the hook, to use a cliche term. It is. I think that when I was there, not one person was not with tears running down their face laughing, including me. My sides hurt for days. And that was really fantastic. And I know there were some other people performing that night too. And your act, bar none, was what stood out the best and the most. And you were basically channeling this stuff. And you could just see it in your eyes. You were calm. You believed every word you said, and that was hilarious to have all these boyfriends who are living luminaries who are supporting you, and some of them don't know they're your boyfriend. Is that part
of it? They don't, at all. They don't, they don't
know. They didn't get the memo.
No.
So, what other things besides the movie do you have coming up? And I just want to share with our listeners that besides being the first melding of spiritual cinema and the comedy concert film genre, the movie that you're doing is just going to be a joy to watch. And you said your mom was there and that you got some great touching moments with her on film, and she was delighted to see you in action and with, you know, just being part of the gang and that whole thing.
Yeah, because I wasn't an easy child to raise, so she hasn't seen, like, a lot of good stuff coming from me my whole life, you know, and now that I'm almost 50, it's like, oh, it's so nice that, you know, I've produced something. Because, I mean, I don't mean to sound so self-deprecating, but, I mean, my mom had a difficult daughter in me, and, you know, I ran away from home when I was 16 and 17 to New York City and became a stripper, and... You know, just always like, oh, Vanda, please don't give me any more bad news. I can't take it, you know, and just living one of those reckless kind of lives, like, you know, how children do, just to piss off their parents. They'll go,
right.
You know that gift you gave me called life? Watch this. I'm going to trash it, you know. And so I did that for many years, and then drugs and alcohol for a couple more decades. And then so... You know, I woke up around 40 going, do I want to live or die? I'd like to live, I think. So the last decade has really been checking in rather than checking out. And now that I'm kind of streamlined, I don't have to, you know, my trajectory isn't messed with by a whole bunch of external stuff anymore like it was, you know, in my early days in Los Angeles. Oh my God, anytime I saw someone prettier than me, it sent me into a depression, you know, and that's really hard in Los Angeles, because everyone's skinnier and prettier and younger and more successful, you know, so it's like, if you live in that comparative reality, it's like horrible for the ego, so...
Yeah.
you know, so, but I don't have that anymore. That's the grace of being an elder, I guess, is that you really get what your contribution is. It has less to do with all that stuff, the worldly stuff that's celebrated in, you know, in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have go ahead. I would just comment on what you just said. I have a quote that I like. It says, an artist has to live before they have something to say, and there are no shortcuts. And that's a Bobby Womack, R&B singer-songwriter quote.
Yes,
that's so true. And what I'm hearing you say is that you've got all this life experience to bring to your work. And if you haven't been through this stuff yourself, you can't help others walk through it.
Yeah. You know, when you've been a like drug and alcohol addict like myself, you just feel like, God, I wasted a lot of time. And in the place of regret comes like, well, if there's purposeful good in everything, I have to say that this is my contribution now. I am someone who has freed herself from to some degree. I won't say I'm out of the woods completely because the refrigerator still has me by the balls sometimes.
Okay.
That's not real spiritual story. But, you know, like I can get wrapped up in work.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can, so checking out rather than checking in is a constant, I think, for all of us. Because we all like to avoid discomfort, you know?
Right.
And I'm now more willing to experience discomfort than I ever was, you know, just to be with it. And, I have people around me who support me in that. Like, just, you know, so it's uncomfortable. All right. You know, so you want chocolate right now. So you can want chocolate. That's okay. You know, and all that stuff. So in place of all of the self-destructive remorse about self-destruction, now I'm I'm like thinking, that's my contribution. Like you said, that's what this artist has to give, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Rick Overton is a great comedian, said to me when I said, was thinking about coming back to LA to pursue my dream again. I said, I don't know, I'm too old for that city. And he goes, actually, now's the time to give back. You owe it to the city.
Mm-hmm.
You owe it to this country. You know?
Right.
You're an elder now. He goes, and by the way, Van, very few people ever come to LA to give something.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to stand out like a sore thumb if you do.
Yeah.
So that was like inspiring to me, for me to hear.
Yeah, Rick Overton was in my acting class many years ago when I was an actress, and we did lots of scenes together, and we were put in one scene where he had to play an attorney and I played the judge. And after the scene was over, he said, "You're scary, lady." And it was really funny because he's a naturally funny guy like you. Have you ever thought of maybe doing a show with him?
Oh, I would love to. In fact, there's a guy up in Seattle. You know, he one of his pet causes is he was put in the stupid kids class when he was younger because he had some kind of what would you call it, dyslexia.
Uh-huh.
And what he's come to learn from that in his journey is that he's gifted. It just wasn't seen that way by his teachers. So
right.
He's like suffered his whole life with a self-esteem issue, but come to find out that he's, you know, he's brilliant. And mm-hmm. and so he's it's really in his heart to help others be free of that, you know, and to help them break outside of the box that traditional education puts kids in and stuff, and to honor their brains the way they are, you know, and celebrate their brains the way they are. So we may be doing a dyslexia, like a fundraiser together up in Seattle. Rick's great. He's out of his mind.
From that. Dyslexia is, has nothing to do with intelligence at all. It's just a disorder on how you read things backwards. And a lot of gifted people have dyslexia. A lot of famous artists have dyslexia. And,
yeah.
You know, if the celebrities who have dyslexia would show themselves, there would be so many. Because
the
creative people generally are. You know, it's a big issue. So,
you know, I think I have it. I haven't read the right books to figure it out.
Mm.
But I just know that I don't have I mean, there's certain things that other people find so easy that I don't, you know, and certain things I find easy that it just works. Like when people say, what year was that? I just have no conception of year like that. So, or if I go into a bathroom and one switch is the light and one switch is the fan, I don't memorize that. I try to memorize it, but I don't remember which is which.
Mm-hmm.
In my house I lived in for 15 years, I always, every time I went in there, tried both. to figure out which was the light and which was the fan.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
So do you ever go and do, like speaking engagements, rather than just your comedy stand-up stuff?
I would love to do more of that. I did one on ConsciousMediaNetwork.com, which is just me and my ideas about life and my, you know, spiritual metaphysical transformation ideas, and I just love that. I love the not having to be funny.
Yes.
And like, especially when I'm with a great interviewer like you, where I can just kind of have a conversation and
right.
not feel like
in a box.
I have to perform.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Now I noticed that you are you've been asked by Bill Harris of The Secret, who has Centerpoint. Holostink is what he offers, which is a kind of a brain remapping program via CD. What will you be doing as part of his new web launch for him? He's asked you to be a part of that. What will you be doing?
Well, tonight I'm going to sit and look at this videotape of mine and figure out, actually it's a DVD. We actually have that technology.
Oh, good.
I know, it's a videotape, like it's an album, right? But I have a DVD of myself I have to watch tonight, which is not really that fun for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to pick out snippets of that will go on his website. So he wants some comedy that relates to some of the stuff he talks about, you know, identity or meditation or there's some Buddhist ideas and stuff. So I'm going to send him little snippets to have on his website. I'm so excited that he asked me to be on it. It's great. Plus, he has, like, he's Mr. Marketing. You know, he has,
yeah,
like, hundreds of thousands of people, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I like what he does. Holosync is very helpful for a lot of people. I have one CD where it's rain and chimes.
Uh-huh.
It's just
yeah.
Hour of rain and chimes with wonderful stuff underneath. And I listened to that, gosh, for about a year, just almost every night. And it just left me feeling better.
So wow, it remaps your brain.
Yeah, and as I'm saying this, I'm remembering that I haven't heard it for a while, so I'm going to go dig it out and listen to it some more. But it's really, really amazing, his work. And he'll be on my show coming up soon as well.
Oh, cool.
And Jack Canfield. So the things that you're doing upcoming are, like, in September and October, are all on your website, correct?
They are. I have little gigs here and there, and the only thing, I don't know where most of your listenership is, but Camarillo is the most local thing I'm doing. This church, the Center for Spiritual Living in Camarillo, and other than that, I'm up in the Pacific Northwest. I'm doing the Wisdom Festival in San Francisco, and I just managed to book a gig into Santa Barbara Yoga Studio, and I'm going to Maine, the high school that I went to in Bath, Maine. I went to a private school there that celebrities started sending their kids to. It was for problem kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's like born out of the Encounter group, kind of share your feelings, things of the 60s, and so you got credit for crying in my high school. Well, not really, but kind of. You know, we had these deep seminars where they wanted to get to your core feelings and things, so they usually ended in tears. So anyway, so Cher sent her kids there, Barbara Walters sent her kids there, and a bunch of people I don't even know. Elijah Blue Allman is going to be there, and it's going to be fun because I get to perform with people that I know through not show business, through a whole different, you know, thing. So
mm-hmm.
We shared the same weird, controversial high school together.
Well, that's great. So you'll be helping people learn how to take themselves more lightly.
Yeah, that's my goal, as long as I can do it with myself, because I'm awfully significant and serious for a comedian. I really, really want to be enlightened, you know, one day soon here, Katie, because I want to walk my talk, you know, being a comedian and then letting yourself get hyper serious or mired in the drama of life, which I do now and then, you know, it's just like, oh, my God. You know what the Sufis say? I don't know if I put this quote in my last.
You did, and I think it's something like, it's the order of how to do things when you get out of bed. You're dancing out of bed, and then the other part, we're going to bleep you if you say it. So
I'll do that. Yeah, but they say basically, if you're not getting out of bed and dancing to the bathroom, you're depressed.
Right.
That's what they said. That's a Sufi, that you're technically depressed if you're not dancing to the bathroom. I'm like, well, that's a high bar to hold. That's great.
Right, right. And when I get out of bed in the morning, my left foot says thank and my right foot says you until I get to the bathroom. It's like it's a way to wake up.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you. So you have some classes, too, that you teach on joke writing and finding your authentic comedic voice, act outs, characters, riffing, dialogues, writing up to the height of your intelligence, microphone basics, and being true in front of others, and dealing with nerves and just having fun, for, you know, just a class that helps people enlighten up, basically.
Yes, I do, and I haven't taught one in a while because I've been performing and doing so many other things, but I would so love to coach again. I love being with people and watching them find their voice and you know, walk through the fear of performing, which is, It can be really scary, but we try to create a really great environment for first-timers. Like, I bring them to shows where we invite the whole audience. So the whole audience is like a womb-like environment for them. And, yeah, people can contact me through my website if they're interested in doing that. And I also work one-on-one with people. And
mm-hmm.
The other thing I do that I'd love to plug a little bit is the yoga, comedy yoga I teach on the beach.
That was going to be my next thing to talk about. And
yeah.
Right now I'd like to just elaborate a little bit more on your comedy classes and
okay.
The kind of safe environment that you create for the people in those classes, because for someone to really blossom and open up, it really requires a lot of safety. How do you make people feel at ease in a class?
Well,
like
ease, it's something in I can't really put my finger on it. It's just something in the way I'm being. You know what I mean? Like, they just, it's all made up, and people are so afraid to be up in front of other people. And there's really, you know, it's just, it's crazy how there's no threat.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no threat. You know, no one has a knife actually at your throat. And all of the discomfort that comes from basically people are concerned that they're going to be judged.
Right.
You know, and basically I say, well, don't worry, because you are going to be judged.
Right. Don't worry about it. Just accept it.
People do judge us, and we judge other people.
Well,
and that's the way it is.
I think partly what causes us to be frightened in front of people is that we judge ourselves the most.
Yeah.
And that's a place to begin, is to find a way to prevail over self-judgment and just accept yourself, warts and all, right?
Yep. And sometimes it's...
And make fun of your warts.
Exactly. Even bring it on stage and admit it. And there's a trick I've done over the years is get to it before they do. Point it out. Point out your fatal flaw before they do.
You're really good at that, too, by the way. I mean, you don't even waste 1 second when you open your mouth before everybody is just belly laughing, just making fun of yourself. I cannot forget one story you told on stage where, you know, you've already mentioned to our listeners about drug and alcohol issues in your life and decades that were given to that, and how you now are checking in instead of checking out. So I feel like it would be okay to bring up how your friends always thought that you were this fitness guru because they saw you riding a bicycle, but they didn't know you had a DUI and had lost your license.
Yeah, they're going by me on these roads. I'm on my bicycle 11 miles into town, 11 miles out, 22 miles a day on this bicycle, on this logging road. My girlfriends are going by going, you go, girl. Vanda's such an athlete at 40. And I'm like, Vanda's a loser. My life is hell. You know? It was a horrible time of life. But
oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I have to say that, you know, riding your bicycle 22 miles a day is really a lot of cardiovascular activity. Did that help you?
I went right from abject alcoholism into like, you know, Olympic athleticism.
Right, right. And did that get you into yoga? Did you find that this kind of, you know, because necessity is the mother of invention, and you needed that bicycle. That bicycle to you was everything. And
yeah.
Your power had to make that bicycle go. So did that get you into things like yoga now?
Yoga had started, you know, it's funny because there was quite a bit of overlap between yoga and getting sober. Like, I started to get sober so many times and started and stopped and started and stopped. And then, you know, even when I was touring with the Dixie Chicks and I was their yoga teacher, you know, there's a free bar every single night in the tour buses.
Oh, boy.
Whatever you would want, you know, and it's been a hectic day. You know, we had 11 semi-trucks and 10 buses, 80 people on staff, and the demands of a brand new government going from town to town to town, you know, like how the hierarchies you set up in these small situations and dealing with the celebrities and all the politics of it and everything. And it was, I mean, it was lovely. It was a great experience. But I was dealing with my alcoholism during that time. There's nothing worse than trying to get up in the morning hungover and teach a yoga class.
Oh, boy.
You just, because the amount of fraudulence that you feel, you know, you just feel, like, I felt like I was such a fraud, you know, and I would kind of try to laugh it off, but it wasn't that funny. It had me, you know, it
right.
really had me. I was owned. So, my last hurrah with alcohol was the two DUIs. Thank God I never killed anyone.
Yes.
Or myself. You know, and then it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And I wish it on anyone who has an alcohol problem that they bottom out with a bunch of DUIs.
Yeah.
You know, because it's your society saying, stop, guess what, you're not welcome, you know, and you can't argue with that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I work with Jeff Van Vonderen, who's the lead interventionist on that show, Intervention on A&E.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he's been my client now for 4 years. And I had a client who was a celebrity who was had a drinking problem. And I heard from casting directors and producers that he was blowing raspberries on the bellies of his leading ladies on the series he was on. And I was like, what? So I checked with this person's wife, and she said, she confessed finally that, yeah, he just couldn't stop drinking. His body needed it. It was to the point where he was saturated. He could not survive without it. And he was teetotaled by 9 o'clock in the morning. And, yeah, we called an interventionist who needed to be a Christian because this person was a Christian. And Jeff was the person that we found, and he flew out from Minnesota and did the intervention. Actually, he trained us for 2 days, and then we all did the intervention. And being this person's talent manager, you know, it was important that I be there. And all of his closest friends and relatives, including his wife, we all wrote him a letter and said, you know, what his alcoholism was causing in our lives, how it was hurting us, and what we expected from him if he wanted to continue to be in our lives, and that we would no longer tolerate the behavior. And every one of us read our letter to him one at a time, and he went to treatment after that. And the next day I said to Jeff, I said, I'd love to meet you for coffee. Are you available? And he said, sure. I met him for coffee, and I said, I didn't even know interventions were available, existed, or possible. You need to have your own TV show because you're saving millions of lives and families by doing this work you're doing, and it needs to have a wider audience. And by hook or by crook, a year or two later, he's now on Intervention. It's the fifth season. They've won the PRISM Award, which is the Art of Making a Difference, every year. And the first year, they also won the PRISM Presidential Award, which is the Art of Leaving a Legacy. And the show is still one of the highest rated on A&E TV. So it's, you never know what's going to happen when you make a declaration.
Wow, that's so cool.
Right.
And that's a great story.
Yeah, it's an honor to be a part of that in any small way that I could. And I spoke the words out to the universe, and it came back in a really powerful way. And nobody had to do anything except allow it.
Yeah.
That's it. Because it's not what you would call a reality show. It's called a reality check show, is what I think.
And
like you're riding your bicycle was for you. So you know, I'm very, very familiar with the pitfalls and the trials and tribulations of attempting to get sober. And I know definitely when a person starts choosing honesty over self-destruction, that healing is in progress. And that's what you do in your shows. You use honesty instead of self-destruction. And I believe that's part of your sobriety.
Yep. And it's, and the other thing is just being willing to be uncomfortable. You know, sometimes it's just those little vague feelings that you can't quite process because they don't have language. You can't really figure out what it is you're feeling, but it's something kind of uncomfortable. And it just, like, now I'm much more thrown to go take a yoga class and tune in or teach a yoga class
or somebody.
Or lie on my bed and close my eyes and watch. Just like, where is it in my body? What's it? What does it feel like? You know, and sometimes it feels like it's going to endlessly be there. Oh, there's anger. There's anger. There's anger. Oh, there's still anger. Oh, there's some jealousy and territorial feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and it seems endless. But then sometimes it feels like being fully alive, like being alive.
Right. You're never more alive than when you're feeling your feelings. And it's when you numb them out that you're not here.
Yeah.
So it's really inspiring.
Can I talk yoga?
You may. I think it's time now. Thanks for that little digression.
Thanks. I like digressing. When 3 mornings a week, or sometimes 4, I go out to Venice Beach on the sand with big bed sheets and about anywhere between 4 and 20 people join me, and we do yoga and breathe and laugh and get with the dolphins, and it's just the fun. It's the most fun yoga I've ever done, ever taught or taken. It's just a sweet group, and then they all jump into the ocean after. I'm not much for jumping in the ocean, but they do, and that's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and Saturday from 9 to 10-ish.
Oh, 9 to 10-ish. I like the ish part. So how do people find out more about that?
Just come
to your website?
You know, I don't have much on my website. It's on Facebook, but let's see, what else? They can actually just send me an email, which is vanda@vanda.us, my narcissistic email address. vanda@vanda.us. Sorry.
That's funny. Well, it's easy to remember because it's your name.
Yeah, vanda@vanda.us is what, if anyone wants to know about yoga, send me an email and I'll send you all the information.
Good.
Yeah.
Great. And is there a charge for this yoga on the beach, jumping in the ocean afterwards?
I do not charge, but people do give me money, and it does make a difference for me when they give money. And I just say, give anything you feel peaceful about, from $0 to $20, and they do. And it really, it can be a trade. Someone brings me fresh figs every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I got a massage therapist who does a trade with me. And some people actually go, I'll go promote your class. I'll hang up flyers for you.
Hmm.
So it's really not about the money. It's just keeping my chops as a yoga teacher and creating community, because these people are great. They're just all ages, races, sizes, you know, everything. It's just the spectrum of human beings. It's great.
Wonderful, wonderful. And that keeps you in shape, too.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's a gentle-ish class. I'm not jumping around in sun salutes or doing the Bikram or anything like that. It's a lot of gentle stretching and breathing, and you know, I like the poses where gravity handles it, like, you know, spinal twists on the ground and stuff where you don't have to do a lot of work. That's my favorite kind of yoga.
Right, and I have a yoga-ish kind of question for you. I notice for myself that when I get away from doing Pilates or yoga, that when I go back to it, like it's been months since I've done it, like if I get an injury that I need to recover from or something in my hip or my shoulder, I'll have to go away from it for a while and see a chiropractor for a while. And when I come back to it, I notice I feel, after I do the hour of Pilates or yoga, I feel sick. I feel just ill, like toxins are leaving my body, and it makes me a little ill for about a day. Does that sound unusual?
No, I've heard that, and I've actually experienced that myself, too, and it, I don't think it's ever lasted for longer than a few days in a row, though, for me. Has it for you? Because it, then I think that's a little bit...
Virus. Yeah. No, it's actually lasted... a day was conservative. Actually, it's more like 3 days it lasts. And then when I do the Pilates or yoga regularly after that, it goes away. It doesn't happen anymore. And I start craving, start craving the activity. It's strange. It's just really strange.
It's the same with cramps, too, and cramps and nausea. Like people get a lot of foot cramps and stuff if they haven't been doing that in a while. But, yeah.
Nausea is one of the symptoms I get, too, and headache.
Yeah.
So do you think that could be the toxins just leaving the body, or?
I think it could be. Yeah, I think it could be. Sometimes it's associated with panic a little bit. Like, I don't know if you ever get a little, for some reason, I get a little panicky sometimes in some yoga poses, and I think it's, you know, those unexplored areas where, I mean,
Marie,
the body is, in fact, an amalgam of all of your life experience,
yeah.
And I've had some doozies, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm just, I don't know what else is in there in terms of hidden in, you know, the issues in the tissues, as they say,
mm-hmm.
You know, the memories in the muscles. And every now and then I'll get into a yoga pose and go, huh, there's an emotion that's not appropriate to the situation.
Yeah.
That's a weird, you know, and I get
a
little...
like anger feeling in a certain pose or a sad feeling in a certain pose.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why the sadness? What's that about, you know, and... So that's why yoga's great, is you get to go in there and I mean, emotions are supposed to be energy in motion, emotion, you know, but oftentimes we don't, the energy doesn't move through us because
mm-hmm.
either it gets
not
appropriate to express or it's too uncomfortable or,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. Yeah, so yoga's like voluntary discomfort. It's developing not only these yoga postures in and of themselves, but a posture in life that you're someone who takes on challenge, you know, who takes
mm-hmm.
on some discomfort. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Life is discomfort at its, you know, most livable. You know, it's not always pleasure and comfort, you know,
mm-hmm.
the times for that, but...
Well, you were suggesting, you know, to be more comfortable when you're uncomfortable. You get uncomfortable and you go lay on your bed and you watch what it is. And I've noticed that... when, as a life coach, when I'm coaching people, that when they say that to me, the thing I say back is, have you considered just becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable places and just letting them be there and just seeing what they want, because they're coming to tell you something every time. And like you said, the issues in the tissues, body work is very important when you've had a lot of drama in your life like you have, and seems to me that yoga would be a great tool for you to become comfortable with uncomfortable things, because you are going at it and doing the discipline. Do you do it daily?
I do pretty much, yeah. If I'm not teaching, I take, and lately I've really taken on I've launched this big campaign to do a class every day, a pretty rigorous class every day.
Wow. And
so, yeah, for 30 days I'm taking that on.
And how is that feeling for you emotionally, if I may ask?
So far it's okay. I'm only on day 4.
Mm.
So, let's see.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you feel, was it a class that was upping the challenge in the poses by quite a bit, or was it just slightly more intense than what you were used to with the first class?
No, I'm doing some pretty rigorous classes. Some, like, I go to Exhale down in Santa Monica, and there are some level 2-3 classes that are just sun salute after sun salute, you know, but I love that. I love that. And I fall in love with the yoga teachers all the time, you know, no matter
mm-hmm.
who it is, just fall in love with them.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
So yoga is really a wonderful modality for people to get in touch with their bodies, their spirit, their mind, their soul, their values, their issues, their everything, basically.
Yes.
There isn't anything yoga isn't good for.
And it doesn't demand any that you're any personality type to do it or that you need to be flexible, because it happens right exactly from where you're at. And the only difference, I'd say, between flexible people and inflexible people is that flexible people have to go farther to get to the same point, which is your edge of your range of motion. So that's the point. We just want to hang out right where there's maximum sensation but not pain and some of these stretches, and just breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Be with it, you know, and it's such a lovely feeling, you know, and you don't have to be a yoga person. Like, I was an addict and an alcoholic, you know, so I came about yoga not because I was naturally, you know,
drawn to it.
Peaceful yoga person.
Yeah.
I really needed it, you know. Yeah.
So it is a big part of your healing and your health then.
Yeah, it still is.
Sounds like it's becoming more so. Go ahead.
I'm not cooked yet. I'm not cooked yet. It seems like the more, you know, I was talking in my act about how, you know, Byron Katie or Eckhart Tolle, they wake up and boom, they're enlightened. One day they're on the floor of a rehab. The next day they're enlightened and they're best-selling authors doing, you know, cruises all over the world writing books. And I'm like, am I... path isn't going that way. It's like enlightened for a couple of days and jerk. Enlightenment, jerk. Enlightened, jerk. I'm like, you know, a couple of steps forward, two steps back.
Yes, yes. As they say, yes. And at least you're making progress. That's the main thing. It's not perfection, it's progress, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But at least you know and understand yourself, and you can have a sense of humor about it. That's very important.
It's, you know, if I get that objective view, I can, but I'm not always funny, you know,
yeah.
And I actually have a coach who reminds me, I thought you were a comedian.
Didn't one of your yoga teachers say recently that we don't raise our kids, we lower them?
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
That's my attention today. I really, that spoke to me, because as a single mom, I believe I raised my kid. When he got in trouble with a little bit of drugs, I took him to feed the homeless and to visit the convalescent centers and take candy and flowers to the elderly so he would see he would end up alone if he didn't change his tune, and he changed his tune immediately. He's a vegan today who drives a Prius and just an awesome human being. So
wow.
I do feel like I raised him instead of lowered him, and I know it didn't have to be that way, because it was a really rough time at times to be a single mom in Hollywood, and I'm really grateful for all of the learnings that I got from that, and to see the passion I had to do it right.
Yeah,
because you don't get two chances at that.
Oh my God! Oh my! It's just a path I just can't imagine, you know. And when they turn out okay, it's like, oh my, what are the chances of that? Because so many don't, you know. I mean, and I know some parents with the best intentions who just, the kids go a whole other direction. You know what I mean? And
right.
My parents had the best intentions, and I was like, I could not rebel fast enough or hard enough. You know,
right.
I was just, a friend of mine said, you either become just like your parents or just not like them, like reacting to them, you know, and I was like, so reactionary.
Yeah, well, that's a good segue for me to bring up something else that I saw in your newsletter recently. It says that just being on the road with these people and making this film, that, you know, that you and the comics are all in love with each other and you really care for one another, and that you had to deal with a lot of human qualities, for lack of saying that other BS word. I have a word for BS, and it's belief system. So you say that you liken it to the way that they put rough hewn rocks in a bag and then let them abrade against each other, and it's all the fodder and all the transformation on the comedy stage that smooths out the rough edges of people, and accessing your own humanity allows others to access theirs. And you said you offered some tips that you hate, and you say that you think they're pretty confronting to the ego. You said at least they are to you. And number one tip is, it's never them, it's always you.
Yeah.
And number two is, if you are not experiencing love and affinity with another, then you can let go of something. Because something's blocking the natural flow of affinity.
Mm.
And
yeah.
I believe what you're saying in that comment is that affinity is our natural birthright and constantly flowing until we pinch it off.
Yeah.
By some of our issues in our tissues.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you want to look at it this way, I think it's a great way to look at things, and it's a brave way and a humble way, because, I mean, we all like to be right about what a jerk that guy was being.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you know what I mean? But, and that's, it's just so humbling to give it up.
Yeah.
Go, I was, oh God, I was just, I don't know. I was just, you know, we're all, I think sometimes, like, we're in the sixth grade, if we're lucky, we're that old, you know, we respond
yes.
to things like a kid.
Yes. It's,
you
so,
know, and
it's the energy that a group of people create. It has its own living entity to it. The energy that's created from a group of people and all their stuff.
Yeah.
And you noticed that in this making of this film, right?
Yeah, with my comics, there were sometimes where if I really put a voice to the emotion that I would be going through, that, you know, and sometimes you don't like who you're being because you know you're not being generous, you know you're not being your best self, and if you could kind of really listen to the way it sounds, like a couple of times I tuned in and all it sounded like was, I want that. That's mine. You can't have that.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. It just really sounds like someone who's 10 or 7 or something, you know. And, you know, and just giving it up and giving up your uniqueness and ego for the sake of a team is something that doesn't come naturally to me. I've always been independent. And, you know, my dad died when I was 17. My brother died when I was 13, so I developed a personality that was kind of knee-jerk reaction to that, which is, I'm on my own, I'm fine. Yeah. I'll handle things, I'm good, I'm capable, you know, and I don't need anybody. And, of course, I'm still single at age 49, but...
Compulsively self-sufficient you are. I'm completely self-contained you.
Yeah.
And tip number three was, either you're 100% at peace with another, or you're making them wrong.
That's a valuable one for me. I really love that one.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you really don't know if you're judging someone because it seems so much like the way it is, or it seems so much like, hey, this is for your own good. I love you. I'm wanting you to, you know, stop drinking or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the truth is that everybody is perfect the way they are and the way they aren't, you know. It's not like you can't say your piece, that one came, that little bit of coaching I got there, either you're 100, I said to a friend, they said, were you making your little sister wrong? And I said, I don't know, was I judging her? How would I know if I'm judging her or not? And my friend said, well, either you're 100% at peace with her, or you're judging her, one or the other.
Right, right. And
then that enabled me to call her back and say, sorry, I was making you wrong because I thought you were making me wrong.
Right. Well, you know, that's part of being human, and the expansion is in catching yourself in the act and cleaning that up.
Yeah,
that's the expansion, and we don't always remember to do that by ourselves, and life comes back and whacks us with a situation that makes us go, oh, that's what that was for. I'm supposed to learn this. And then tip number four is, if we treat people as they are, we make them worse. If we treat people as they might be, we help them become what they are capable of becoming. And that's a George Bernard Shaw quote. Which I've ascribed to, and I used it on my son growing up. I just always treated him like of what he was capable of becoming, and he rose to that. Like, for instance, he had a bad habit of leaving the lights on. And the light bill was through the roof. And I was like, two people should not be using this much electricity. This is outrageous. I said, okay, I want you now to be the electricity police. Can you be the electricity police? And he saw that there was power in being an authority. And he said, I can do that. I said, okay, you're the electricity police. I cannot tell you the nights I had to read in the dark. He was so good at being the electricity police. So the minute I gave him a position and a title, he rose
right.
to the occasion, and he stopped leaving the lights on, and he left me reading in the dark, and I just had to laugh a lot of times. because I gave him a title that he rose to. So I just kept doing that and doing that and doing that. So it was, it does work when you do that. And it's not always easy to remember to do that.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. That's a George Bernard Shaw poem. Is a wonderful poem, the whole thing about, I have come to the decision, or I have come to the frightening conclusion that I am the decisive element. It is my mood that creates the weather. It is my disposition. I can't remember. I can be an instrument of healing or an instrument of, whatever.
It's destruction.
Yeah, it is. In any given situation, I can escalate the drama of it, or I can heal it, kind of thing.
Or I can escalate the healing of it.
Yeah.
It's always a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know when people get upset about another person, how they did them wrong or whatever, it's hard to see that, you know, when you give someone your anger, you give them your power, that you're actually making them substantial in your life by getting upset or letting them upset you. And it's like sometimes the deal is to be spacious enough to get back in touch with what is your commitment to other human beings? Like, if you want human beings to thrive and be great around you, that you could actually be of service to the people that you're reacting to, you know?
Right.
And that's a turnaround that is, could you hold the bar higher and see them as the great, radiant, eternal entity that they are, you know? And it's easy when you're a yoga teacher because that's what you're set up for. But in my daily life, you know, when I'm dealing with, you know, my comedians or my boyfriends.
Yeah, and there's truth in all humor, and that's why humor can be so healing, is because there is truth in all humor. And I believe that a good comic will use the best of their life experience to help others be inspired to use the best of their life experience and to just accept and relax about where they are, who they are in that moment, and to remember to have fun. And so I want to thank you, Vanda, for being my guest tonight. We've come up to the last of the Spiritual Hollywood Hour. Boy, that went by fast.
And,
pardon?
Yeah. Well, thank you for the way you honor my work, because you really do, and I just so appreciate it, and I honor yours.
Thank you
for doing what you do, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. I want to give your website again. That's www.vanda, VANDA.us, and believe me, Vanda, I did hear what you said, and I thank you for your words. That was very nice of you to say that. I just wanted to acknowledge you for acknowledging me and let you know that I didn't deflect it. I took it in. So I just want to remind everybody to stand up really straight, take a deep breath, and love yourself. And remember, the last six letters of attraction are action. So get in action and create the life that you want for yourself. And have a great week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Vanda, again, for being here. And we'll see you next week. Good night.
Night.